Welcome to In A Few Words with me, Alice Taylor, and Neretan Sehmini. The purpose of this podcast is to explain, in a few words, what's happening in Albania and to present it in a way that makes sense to non-Albanians. I'm an editor at Exit AL English Edition, and Neretan is the co-founder. He's also a political analyst, was previously a lecturer at the University of Tirana, and has a current affairs show on Euronews Albania. During these conversations, we hope to bring you an easy-to-digest analysis of events, issues, and current hot topics in Albania and the region. Our topic for today is one that's dominated the news worldwide in the last week. Unless you've been living in isolation and with no internet, you probably know that the US elections have just taken place. At the time of recording, the winner has not yet been called, although it does seem that Democratic candidate Joe Biden has a slight edge. But what I really want to know is what impact, if any, do the results have on Albania? Why are Albanians so interested in American politics? And why does there seem to be a big number of Trump supporters in Albania? Good morning, Nerita.
Good morning.
So first things first, I'm hearing a lot of people saying that the outcome of the American elections is going to have a big impact on Albania. Is this true?
Well, I don't think this is true, if I had to answer to this shortly. The relations between Albania and the US have been constant during the past three decades after the diplomatic relations were reinstated in 1990 after the fall of communism. And despite of the precedent in the White House or the government of Albania, the relations have been very, very close. Both Democrat and Republican presidents have received Albanian leaders in the White House and have visited Albania in case of President Bush. President Clinton has received twice Albanian leaders in the White House. There have been visits by the Secretary of State, Democrat Secretary of State in Albania, and a Republican Secretary of State in Albania. And there have been cooperation in international missions fighting terrorism and fighting in Afghanistan and Iraq, which Albania has always participated. Albania has assisted the US in relocating some of the prisoners from Guantanamo prison. Both socialists and Democrats in Albania have continued this policy. The same applies also to Albanian participation in international missions. Both socialists and Democrats, when they've been in power, they have maintain this policy. Is the same with the Iranian MEKs, which they were located in Albania from Iraq. They started under the government of Democrat Prime Minister Berisha and then continued under the socialist Edi Rama. So in general, you cannot see any difference, no matter who was sitting at the White House and no matter who was sitting in the Prime Minister's chair in Albania. Mm-hmm. There are mutual interests. US has some strategic interests in the Balkans, and Albanians play an important role in the peace and stability in the Balkans. And from the other side, Albania, with its Western vocation, has always needed some international support, and the US has always been there for them.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've heard some people saying, oh, if Biden becomes president, this would be a disaster for Albania. I can't quite put my finger on why it would be such a disaster. Can you provide any insight into this?
I mean, I don't see if there is any foundation to this claim. We in Albania, when we talk about politics, we talk in superior terms and we use a lot of emotional terms, etc. But I'll guess that some people reflect some kind of political preferences. I mean, there is one thing that we need to mention here to understand the position of some people. If we go back in the last presidential elections in the US in 2016, Albanian Prime Minister Edi Rama, during the primaries in the US, went out in CNN and he basically said that if Trump would become a president, that would be a disaster for America, a disaster for the world, a disaster for Albanian-American relations. Well, the truth is that he became a president, and this disaster didn't come alone. Especially in the relationship between Albania and US, nothing changed, as I previously mentioned. I mean, nothing changed. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people in Albania which are against Edi Rama and they want him removed from the office, they thought naively that if Trump will become a president, given the fact that Rama went out publicly against him and used even some not very nice words personally for Trump, they thought that then Trump will remove Rama from office. And they were trying to project the internal fight for power, the internal political conflicts, they were trying to project in the race in the US. So that's what they're doing even now. First, in case of Albanians of Kosovo, which has some relevance with Albanians in Albania, there is more substantial concern about who will be sitting at the White House. And this has to do with the recent developments when the Trump administration basically pushed for the removal of Albin Hoti from prime minister. Mm-hmm. And they started this process of negotiations between Serbia and Kosovo. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mediated by Richard Grenell, which is the special envoy of President Trump.
Who's recently appeared at Serbian pro-Trump rallies in America.
But also he's appeared in Albanian pro-Trump rallies. So basically he's working for his boss and is trying to solicit the vote of Serbs, Albanians and everybody else for that matter. But given the fact that the Trump administration was instrumental in removing a legitimate elected government in Kosovo only because they were not very sympathetic of having this kind of negotiations with Serbia and Kosovo, created this, let's say, sentiments against the Trump administration among some Albanian Kosovo. From a practical point of view, it is clear that if Trump will not be sitting at the White House, then the negotiations with Serbia and Kosovo maybe will be reinstated on some different, let's say, along some different lines. Before Trump interjected in this negotiations, it was the European Union which was leading the negotiations. Mm-hmm. But then Trump kind of sidestepped all the process and got into the field and said that I'll bring both sides together with this theory that we can solve the political problems between the two countries by providing some economic cooperation and economic assistance. Mm-hmm. This made many European countries concerned because this was a parallel process when before it was accepted by the international community that it would be European Union that would lead the negotiations. And there was some strife between the two sides of Atlantic. And now basically we have had two parallel processes, one in Washington and another one in Brussels. And a lot of people that are sensitive about the way how the negotiations are going forward, definitely they have a preference of who is sitting in the White House. And there is another point here when it comes to Biden. He's been openly supportive of the cause of Kosovo Albanians. He has been more critical about Serbs, especially their military intervention and their ethnic cleansing in Kosovo 2 decades ago. So in that sense, this creates a lot of premises for taking positions or at least having some preferences among Albanians in Kosovo.
This is strange because from what I've seen on Twitter and social media, etc., people tend to be very anti-Biden. But if you're saying he's more sympathetic to the Kosovo-Albanian plight and sort of less pro-Serb, as some might interpret Trump being, how is that? I mean, I don't understand how these people who are sort of pro-Kosovo can then not support someone who's fighting for the same thing.
First of all, doesn't mean that those that are louder are the majority. So basically, if you can see, not only Albania but also other countries, those that support Trump are more louder. And they are more active, and this creates the impression that they are a majority or there are too many. Mm. I mean, I don't think there are too many Trump supporters in Albania or in Kosovo. There are, definitely, and they are louder, but I don't think they are. But this matter is mute. I mean, who cares how many supporters are for Trump? I mean, it doesn't count, it doesn't have any influence on American elections, it doesn't change anything, as I said. But one thing is true, that, as I said, we always project the internal domestic politics into American race. You have to understand that If we go back to Kosovo, Trump administration interfered, and in a way it was instrumental for bringing down Albin Kurti's government. Which means that all the supporters of Albin Kurti are naturally against Trump.
Yes.
But then it was the President Thaçi's party that benefited from having Trump start this process of negotiations parallel with the European negotiations. So which means that all the supporters of Thaçi, of President Thaçi in Kosovo, are pro-Trump. They want this line of negotiations to carry on because they have more leverage, or they think that this is the best way. So they reflect this internal interest into support for Trump. But I mean, if you ask people what are Trump's policies in the US or what are their policies anywhere, nobody knows too much about that. So yes, there is some, let's say, rational basis for their preferences when it comes to negotiations with Kosovo and Serbia, because Trump administrations has been active and has had a clear approach how these negotiations need to go on, and this has created supporters and opponents in Kosovo and to some extent also in Albania. But beyond and above this, there is nothing else. Everything else is like general whatever partisanship for whatever reason people think that they, you know. I mean, don't forget one thing, people need to identify politically or ideologically, and given the fact that domestic politics is not very fulfilling, sometimes we take sides in world politics.
In terms of the Kosovo situation, you were talking about Trump sort of going in and being instrumental in bringing down Kurti's government, the negotiations that went on in the White House. Why is he interested in Kosovo? And I don't mean that in a derogatory way to Kosovo, but I mean, this was it something as propaganda for his campaign? Is it all in the name of regional stability, or is it something to do with perceived Chinese, Russian influence? Why does he care?
First, based on the policy priorities of US government, the US administration, doesn't matter who is at the White House, for them Balkans is important because it has some geostrategical importance. They don't want Russian, Chinese, sometimes even Turkish influence in the Balkans. And both these three powers, they are trying to influence Balkans. And you have to know that Balkans is always at the frontier of East and West, of before it was communism and capitalism, East or West, the religious, etc. So, and it's in a way it has a lot of geographical importance. It's like it's in the crossroads of trade routes and political cleavages and religious cleavages, whatever. So it has some importance. So the priority for Western European countries, EU and also US, has always been that the Balkans should be under their influence or aligned with the West. In the past, has been much influence of the Balkans from the East. I mean, Soviet Union, etc. The Balkans and Eastern Europe were their domain. This changed after the communism fell down, then everything was balanced. And for some time, it seemed like the Balkan was definitely aligned with the West. With the recent developments, you have more activity from Russia, especially in Serbia. They are providing military assistance, they're providing aid, etc. You have Turkey, which is trying with this policy of neo-Ottomanism to culturally invest, religiously invest in the region, but also economically. And they're trying to have these countries under their influence. And the reason you have China, which is coming in a more, let's say, sneaky way through investments.
Infrastructure, the One Belt, One Road.
So, yes, definitely there is some importance for the US administration. For that reason, every administration, be it Democrat or Republican, will always be interested at least in the short or medium term for the Balkans. But in the case of Trump, there is a specific why Trump came on board. Both Prime Minister Thaçi and Serbian President Vučić, they came with some plan of reaching an agreement through exchange of territories. they talked about that. I mean, now there is enough evidence to believe that they talked about that in secret, or at least in a non-transparent way.
Yes.
There weren't too many other people involved, and they had an idea that how they can reach an agreement which would include some land swaps or along those lines. It seems that this plan that they had was completely rejected by the European Union, and especially by Chancellor Merkel, which even came openly in public and said that there is no way that can be any border changes in the Balkans, because this will open a Pandora box and will bring back all days of conflict. But these two leaders didn't stop. They went behind the backs of European leaders and Merkel, and they reached out to the Trump administration with their idea. And it seems like the Trump administration just seized this opportunity, because Trump was interested to have some international achievements, especially when it comes to parties in conflict, because he prides himself in his negotiation skills, in bringing together,
being a president who hasn't gone to war,
etc. And especially as the elections in the US were approaching and he was desperately looking for some international success. He tried between in the Middle East with Palestine and Israel, but there wasn't too much success there. He tried with Northern Korea to improve the relations and to stop them from having this nuclear weapon developed, and he didn't succeed there. So he, at some point, his administration and his advisors focused on Kosovo and said this might be easy, especially given the willingness of both leaders of both countries to come up with some deal. That's why he came to that. But his administration's approach raised a lot of question marks and concerns in the European Union and among European leaders. So what Trump did in order not to, in a way, not to piss off Europeans, he said that I will let Europeans focus on the political negotiation, the political problems between the two countries, and I'll focus on the economic relations. And came up with this plan of economic normalizations, which didn't directly contradict what was going on under the European leadership in the negotiations, and said it's complementary. It was more, let's say, tailored for Trump persona as a leader of business, as a person that makes deal, etc. So that's why Trump became so much interested. And you know what happened? They had these discussions in the White House. They had this economic normalization accord, whatever it was, which is not bad. It's not a big deal. Doesn't bring too much of a tail, but it's not bad. It's good that they came together. It's good that they talk to each other. It's good that there is some process. But I mean, the impact of these accords is minimal, although the Trump administration tried to kind of inflate the importance of the achievement.
Okay, now bringing it back to Albania again, I've lived in four countries and I have never experienced anything like the attention that internationals get here. For example, the EU delegation, various ambassadors. I mean, if an ambassador tweets, it's front page news within minutes. And this is quite strange for me as an outsider to see. I'm curious to understand why you think so much importance is placed on what internationals and ambassadors have to say.
I mean, it's not that I have a clear understanding of this issue. I don't have a clear answer, but I can speculate and I have some ideas why it might be. First of all, it has to do with the long isolation of Albania. For 40 years, we were totally isolated like no other country in Eastern Europe. We were isolated from the West and from the East. So most of the Albanians were born and raised generations in Albania without any contact with the outside world, without even knowledge of the outside world. And to understand this, you should understand that even foreign music was not allowed.
Yes.
I mean, we were raised without even knowing who were the singers and what were the musical trends abroad. Literature was also forbidden. Everything was
clothing, hairstyles.
Everything. I mean, we didn't have chewing gum in Albania. We didn't have bananas. We didn't have
jeans.
Coca-Cola or Pepsi or gin. So It was a total political, economic, trade and also cultural isolation. At the end of the 80s, as the isolation came to ease down a little bit because of the economic crisis in Albania, and Albania started to open up a little bit economically from the world, and then we started to receive signals from Western TV stations, because there were signal scramblers in Albania. You couldn't even watch foreign TV stations. Then Albania started to peek at the world, and they saw all this flashy advertising with a fantastic world in many Italian TVs, with life, happy life, and happy people doing all these great things as advertising it is.
They realized that what they'd been told, that Albania was the best place in the world, was not.
And they realized that these people are not suffering. They realized that capitalism might not be as it was described by the communists in Albania. So they established this kind of admiration in the last years of the communism. So communism was trying to brainwash Albanians that we were the happiest country in the world, we were like a special case in the world, in the history of the world. And everybody else was suffering, and then we realized that no, that's not true. I mean, we see happy people, we see more comfort, more material wealth, etc. So these admirations about the foreigners started by the end of communism. And then, at the end of communism and beginning of the transition, hundreds of thousands of Albanians migrated abroad. Albania is one of the most affected countries in the world by migration. At least between 35 and 50% of the population has migrated in the past 10 decades, which means that our relations with the outside world became very strong suddenly, from a total isolation to total integration. And these people provided for Albanians through remittances, etc., etc. Most of them are in Italy, about 600,000 to 700,000, are in Greece, about 100,000 in the US, and whatever. This also increase the importance. So these people are living abroad, they are not bringing remittances back and support, but also speaking about democracy, speaking about a different world with rules. So this, the world has become a standard for Albania. In the meantime, in Albania, things haven't gone so well. There isn't too much economic progress, there isn't too much progress in terms of democracy and the rule of law, etc. So still, our reference point has become the world. We have still now a new admiration for the world, not only for the material wealth that we saw through those advertising in the past, but also for their rule of law, for their way of living. So in a way, when foreigners speak in Albania, they are speaking as a representative of something that we do admire. That's why their words have much say. And the third reason is that we still are dependent on foreign assistance and foreign support for many reasons. Technical assistance, other assistance, political support, international support. Especially in the case of the European Union, Albanians want to become part of EU. This process has been very slow, it has been very painful, it hasn't progressed much. And in the meantime, our importance, the importance of being part of EU in our eyes has increased, because we have realized that we are not very much capable of improving many things in Albania on our own, and we see European Union not as a reality that will change our economic plight, but also as a way that will help us improve our governance and our democracy. So if majority of Albanians, 98%, they want to be part of the European Union, then when the ambassador of European Union is talking about Albania, is talking about the progress that Albania is making, that has a lot of importance from the point of view of Albania. It's the same for the US ambassador. If we admire US, if we believe that US is important for Albania, then when the US ambassador speaks, is important for many Albanians.
This was going to be my next question, and it was actually a question that was posed to me by another ambassador. And they said, you know, they said they'd never been positioned in a country, posted in a country where there was this climate of sort of ambassadors being put on a pedestal. And they said to me, you know, I walk to work every day, not walk, but I walk to lunch every day, and you know, I go about my business with no fuss. But the American ambassador is seen, is presented as sort of on a pedestal, you know, and this is no disrespect to the work that the ambassador does or her personally, but that they were very much at the top of the hierarchy of ambassadors, so to speak, and they had no idea why. They couldn't understand why the sort of American ambassador, what they say, is, I mean, sort of more important than the prime minister to a certain extent.
I mean, Albania is one of the most pro-American countries in the world. I mean, it might be top three, top five, mm-hmm. in the worst case, but I'm sure it's top three, together with Kosovo. Mm-hmm. There are historical reasons. Americans have been very important in the state formation of Albania. In 1990, it was President Wilson that basically blocked a further partition of Albania. Albania was divided in 1913 from big powers. A part of that was given to under Serbia, which is Kosovo territory today, part to Macedonia, some part to Northern Greece, etc. In 1919, at the peace conference in Paris, there was a new attempt to further partition Albania. And it was President Wilson which vetoed all these efforts, and in a way was instrumental and critical in preserving Albanians' integrity. Albanians are very, very thankful, mm-hmm. for this act. And we have a main square in Albania which is named after Wilson, mm-hmm. and we have a monument of Wilson,
yes.
at this square. First.
Which is quite confusing to Americans in Albania.
Absolutely. But I mean, I would say it might look ridiculous to some, but it's deserved,
yes.
and it's meaningful to Albanians. And don't forget that you have monuments of everyone everywhere in the world.
Yes.
Don't tell me that every monument in the world has deserved and is not seen by some as ridiculous to have. Mm. I mean, even in the UK or anywhere. So, first. And the second is that they were very, very instrumental in liberation of Kosovo, from stopping the ethnic cleansing in Kosovo by Serb forces, and in a way helping Kosovo regain the independence from Serbia after more than one century, which created, basically was the basis for creation of an independent Kosovo. And this is huge, not only for Kosovo, but for Albanians in general, for and as an Albanian nation. So, not for anything else, only for these two important acts in the history of Albanian nation, Albanians have a total admiration and respect and gratefulness and thankfulness and are grateful, mm-hmm. to US. In general, US has been a country which has been continuously supportive of Albanians, mm-hmm. for long periods of time. Our relations with other countries have gone up and down. Our relations with the US have remained stable, and the US have been very supportive and have helped us in many ways. So even for that, we are grateful. This is one side of the story. The other side of the story is that Americans are more, let's say, active in trying to influence domestic affairs anywhere in the world. So there is the other part. I mean, there might be foreign ambassadors in Albania don't understand that. But they have to understand that the American ambassadors are also more active in Albania.
Yeah.
They are trying to, they talk more, they influence more, and they have maybe more leverage because of the power of US, etc. But it also has to do with the, let's say, the activism of American foreign policy, which is reflected in the public activity of American ambassadors in Albania. And this is not only in Albania, this is everywhere. I mean, absolutely, in the small countries in the world, you'll find the same situation as in Albania. You don't find it in Western world, but still, even in the Western world, sometimes you have American ambassadors that say things. Mm-hmm. They are, I mean, you have the American ambassadors in Italy 2 years ago that created public outcry because he was outspoken. And you have in Germany, Richard Grenell was outspoken. So. Definitely has to do also with...
diplomats don't tend... I mean, the clue is in the name. They tend to be diplomatic, whereas often I find the American ambassador can be quite maybe overstepping that diplomacy sort of neutrality that you would expect from...
Yes, I mean, this is a matter of fact, and to some extent it has to do also with the role that the US has played in the history of many other countries. Because if you ask for American help and American support in moments of difficulty, then you have to live with them providing some opinions and having some positions even in times of peace. I mean, we shouldn't forget that Americans have supported and have been instrumental in supporting Western Europe and many countries in the world in difficult times. And then this is reflected also in peaceful times. So we have to live
with
that.
It's a small price to pay.
America has had an important role in the world. Yes. And as a reflection of this role, which has been positive and which has been pro-democracy, as a reflection of this role, we have also to admit or accept or even be indifferent when some American ambassadors are talking more than we like them to talk.
Okay, great. The last two questions I want to ask you. Well, the first is more of a clarification, just because it's something I've heard so much. So you, regardless of who wins this election, whether it's Biden or Trump, you don't see it having any particular impact, positively or negatively, on the situation in Albania?
I mean, personally, I don't see any difference, no matter who will be sitting in the White House next January.
But potentially could have an impact in Kosovo.
Potentially, it could have some impact in Kosovo, but also I would say that even if it's Trump, a second term for Trump that doesn't need to have some artificial international achievement might be much better in terms of their relation with Kosovo. I'm sure that a second Trump term will be more realistic of how much they can really lead the negotiations with Kosovo and Serbia, ignoring the European Union. I'm sure that in a second Trump term, there will be more coordination between Trump administration and European Union, and this will be a more, let's say, solid process of negotiation between two countries. So even in that case, I don't see too much difference.
And the last question, I'm not going to ask you outright who you want to win, but I'm going to ask you what you think would be positives for each person if they were to, Trump or Biden, if they were to become the next president. Just in brief.
I mean, I would say this. Trump, in terms of public policy, Trump has had an above average record. He has done some good to great things in terms of economy and some other public policy. And if it wasn't for his persona, and if it wasn't for a lot of other things that he has done, which have had some social, let's say, impact, his second term would have been a walk in the park. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that, apart from his economic policy, apart from public policies, he has taken so strong positions in many social issues, and in a way has contributed to a lot of, let's say, to a lot of social strife, to a lot of
a very painful social divide.
And then he has been very much presidential, and in international relations, he has overestimated his personal persona and skills and abilities, which in some cases have backfired or have done more wrong than good. So, I mean, if it was an American voter, I would have been really, really perplexed. Mm-hmm. Because on the other side, you have Biden, which is a more pleasant persona, but he's old and he's old.
Yes.
And he's been so much in the administration, he will bring nothing new, he will not bring any energy. And when it comes to public policy, I really don't know what he's going to do. So it's not a clear-cut choice. It's not. And you have to understand that both men have their flaws, and you have to understand that any one of them has had some good times and some bad times, and it will be very tough. I have to say that economically, I would vote for Trump. And in terms of whatever social or some political behavior, and let's say presidential approach, I would vote for Biden. So at the end, I wouldn't know what to do.
It's the first election in any country where I've seen where it's not sort of you're either pro-Trump or pro-Biden. It's you're either pro-Trump or anti-Trump. Like, people don't seem to be talking about Biden so much. It's either for or against Trump. Okay, Naratan, thank you very much for that interview.
It was a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.